Avoiding your unfinished home projects because you're not sure where to start? Thumbtack knows homes, so you don't have to. Don't know the difference between matte paint finish and satin? Or what that clunking sound from your dryer is? With Thumbtack, you don't have to be a home pro. You just have to hire one. You can hire top-rated pros, see price estimates, and read reviews, all on the app. Download today.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
Looking for a job is lonely. Endless searching, phone calls that go nowhere, applications that vanish into thin air. What if you could link with dozens of local companies who are hiring right now with just one connection? That's Express Employment Professionals. Find us at expresspros.com. One connection, endless opportunities, and no fees ever for job seekers. Express Employment Professionals. Expresspros.com.
Hey, hi, how are you? Welcome in. It is Sunday Mass. Reverend Arcan here taking you up until 12:30. It's supposed to be a nice long Mass today. We're supposed to have 3 hours together. Unfortunately, the weather didn't cooperate yesterday. Hopefully it cooperates today. What happens if a double header gets rained out? You have a quadruple header? I don't even know.
Don't even say that to me, Arcan.
What, you don't want to produce four straight games, Jacob?
No.
What's wrong with that? Anyways, should be a nice one down at the park today. I just saw on the weather that it's supposed to clear up very shortly, and it's not even raining that hard right now, but yesterday, oh boy, that was rough. You could tell. The Red Sox ownership group is already in midseason form when it comes to waiting a long time to decide to call an obviously rained out game and say, all right, everybody, you can go home. There's not going to be a game today. It was pretty clear that thing wasn't clearing up yesterday. But unfortunately, here we are. Red Sox playing a doubleheader. We'll have the first game starting at 1:35 against the St. Louis Cardinals and the later game, which, by the way, we still don't have a starting pitcher for. I just checked, and Richard Fitz not listed as one of the probables yet, which I find interesting. We got Sean Newcomb going today, and a player was called up from Pawtucket who – well, not Pawtucket. Oh, my God. What am I talking about, Pawtucket? Called up from Worcester. I can't believe I said that. You know why? I was just watching the demolition of the stadium. A clip where it showed the whole thing getting knocked down, and it made me sad. Made me a little emotional, but Hunter Dobbins has been called up from Worcester. Newcomb is starting game one. Fitz not listed in the probable, so we'll see. And this kid, Dobbins, Texas Tech product, his first outing as a reliever back on April 1st, he allowed 3 home runs in 3 2/3 innings. So we'll see if they ends up if they end up using him today or not. We have a lot to get to here. Red Sox related, Patriots related, Celtics related, Final Four related, pretty much everything other than the Bruins, which I feel like Bridget, Scott, and Razor covered in their penultimate Sunday skate.
It's plenty enough.
Thank you very much there, Mac Jones. Did you happen to catch that at the end? Did you catch that at the end of the Red Sox call? The offense did plenty enough? That reminded me so much of Mac Jones. Like, where have I heard that before? Right,
it's Mac plenty Jones. Enough.
Of course. Anyways, second to last Sunday skate from Bridget, Scott, and Razor. And I understand, it's been a rough go. This season has not been a whole lot of fun for them or for Bruins fans or for anybody. But, Jacob, you can back me up here. Was that not one of the worst intros that any radio has ever gotten for the upcoming show?
Yeah, it was very lackluster.
That was brutal. Who's up next? Arcand.
Oh.
Oh, Arcand. Yeah, okay. Yeah, we've heard of Arcand. Yeah, we know. Arcand, he's a person. He's a person who talks on the radio. Yeah, it's great. Everybody, Arcan. Not like, stay tuned. Oh, I can't wait to hear what Arcan's going to say. None of that. No. Just, yeah, okay, Arcan. What else do we have to talk about? Oh, yeah, Soldier Boy on the road trip. You know, like, it was just, oh, that was tough. I try and pump them up every chance I get. I'm not getting my tires pumped the same way. We're going to have to have a meeting about that at some point in the offseason. Anyways, let's get to our headlines today. We'll start with the Red Sox. And, of course, I'm kidding. I love everybody on the Sunday skate very much. But the Red Sox. Offense has woken up after what was a troubling start to the year, and I think we were all pretty troubled by that. I definitely was. Devers was the poster boy of it, as he was unable to make contact with any pitches for the first week of the season. But Trevor Story, Tristan Casas, Alex Bregman, Sedan Rafaela, who's still struggling, but, like, you know, Connor Wong, all these guys, with the exception of Willy Abreu and Christian Campbell, basically everybody was still on Fort Myers time is what it looked like, and that to me was troubling, because one thing I expected right out of the gate was for the Red Sox offense to maybe not tear the cover off the ball, but to at least have some balance. I thought there was going to be some balance throughout the lineup, even if, you know, a couple guys got off to slumps to start the year. And that happens all the time. I mean, listen, it's Major League Baseball. Guys come out of the spring, and they're just not quite as far along as they want to be. The pitchers almost every single year are further along than the hitters. That's just the way it goes. They show up a little sooner, and they have more time to get ready, and that's the way it works. But I didn't expect there to be almost a team-wide offensive blackout like that. Like, that was pretty rough to watch. And I think had a lot of people wondering, oh, no, did we maybe overrate what Alex Bregman's going to be? What Tristan Casas is coming off the injury? Trevor Story coming off an injury? Is Rafael Devers broken? Is he going to be able to snap out of this? All those questions. And listen, 1 week out of a Major League Baseball season is maybe a little early to start asking questions like that, but it's all we had to go off of, and it was really pretty bad. I mean, it's not like we were exaggerating what we were seeing. We were all watching the same games. We were all watching these same at-bats. Rafael Devers got off to the worst start of all time. So I'm not sitting here trying to justify people panicking or saying that it's okay. It is okay. You can react however you want. But it does seem as though the offense has started to snap out of it. And you really saw it the other day against the Cardinals, a team that is also off to a hot start. But they come to Fenway, and the Red Sox were ready for them, that's for sure. And it was nice to see. So good to see that. Nice that there's a doubleheader today. I hope the offense continues to hit. And I think that we, as a fan base, and I know I've been on this a little more than other people, but I think as a fan base, Red Sox fans, I don't know if he's in town this week or not. He might be. I probably should be. Chaim Bloom's with the Cardinals. And he's owed an apology, I think. I think Chaim Bloom is owed an apology. I think that people were way too tough on him for things that he didn't really have much control over. And I think you're starting to see that right now. Craig Breslow, and I was just reading Sean McAdam over at Mass Live, Craig Breslow's had a great offseason, hasn't he? Everybody's pretty much said that. What's Craig Breslow done that's been so impressive? Well, he traded for Garrett Crochet, and who did he trade for Garrett Crochet again? Oh, that's right, Kyle Teal, who was drafted by who? Chaim Bloom. Christian Campbell just got locked up to a big extension. Who drafted Christian Campbell? Oh, right, that'd be Chaim Bloom in the fourth round. Roman Anthony, drafted by Chaim Bloom, second-round pick, but still. Marcelo Meyer, you know? I mean, we can go on down the list. Now, we all know that Bloom drafted those guys, and we weren't sure exactly what they were going to become. But now we've seen what they've become. And the fact that he held on to them as strongly as he did is, I think, now starting to look a lot smarter. The other thing that Breslow did this offseason is he spent money. He spent money on Alex Bregman, $40 million on Alex Bregman. I forget exactly what the number was for Aroldis Chapman, but that was a relatively big one, too, for a 38-year-old reliever. And I can't help but look at those moves, look at those deals, and think that if Chaim Bloom was allowed to spend that kind of money, if they gave him the opportunity to spend that type of $40 million on one player, I think he would have. I don't think he was given that opportunity. The Chaim Bloom experience here started off with him being ordered to trade Mookie Betts. And then a year later, Xander Bogaerts, out the door. He got a crazy offer from the Padres, and that may have happened anyway. But those two things in a row, I think, really got everyone all upset at Chaim Bloom, as though it was his decision to do all those things. And I can't imagine that any baseball person in the world would have, with Mookie Betts in particular, with Xander Bogaerts, different story, ridiculous contract, hard to match that when a team goes above and beyond. But there's not a baseball executive in the world that would have willingly handled the Mookie Betts situation that way. That was an order from on high. And I think that Bloom getting the lion's share of the brunt of the blame for that was always ridiculous. And yeah, he wasn't really all that willing to part with a lot of his prospects and make those big trades. But you also have to remember that a lot of these prospects weren't top three prospects at the time. Meyer was a top prospect right away. Anthony and Campbell and Teal, those guys, it took a while for them to get where they were and amass the value that they've brought in. And now you're seeing it. And I think the vision of High and Bloom at the time to draft those guys is something that's getting completely ignored, completely overlooked. And I think that if you happen to see Bloom walking around Fenway today, or hanging out around you know, around the concourse or something like that, you should go up and say, hey, you know what, Chaim, we didn't treat you fair around here. We didn't really give you a fair shake. You had a plan that we were a little impatient with. You didn't spend a lot of money, but that wasn't really your fault. We know you didn't want to trade Mookie Betts that they told you to. And you made some really nice draft picks. And listen, there were some trades at the deadline that got made that weren't great. It's not like he was perfect while he was here. I'm not here to tell you that Chaim Bloom was some, you know, that he was the greatest GM of all time. It's not Branch Rickey here or anything like that. But he did a lot more good than bad, I think. I think he did a lot more good than bad. And with the Cardinals in town right now, it just got me thinking about that, especially with everybody giving Breslow credit. And by the way, Breslow deserves credit. Breslow deserves credit for everything that he's done this year. He executed that trade. He went out there and made that push for Bregman, and they agreed to it, and I think that all deserves all the props that it's getting. All of it does. But you have to remember that a big reason why you're in the position that you are here with these young players and the ability to sort of maneuver like this is because of Bloom and the draft picks that he made and the fact that he held on to those prospects instead of trading them when their value wasn't as high as it is right now. I think that that's 100% fair and something that we should all be thinking about. That being said, there's one part of the Red Sox franchise and the roster right now that has me a little bit concerned, and that's the rotation. And I just told you a minute ago about Richard Fitz not being on the probables, Hunter Dobbins getting called up from Worcester. We saw Walker Buehler yesterday, and I was waiting to see a real strong start from Buehler. I thought that that would be a nice thing to see, and we haven't seen it yet. We haven't seen Tanner Houck really go out there and look like the Tanner Houck of last year yet either. We've had one pretty good start from Crochet and one fantastic start from Crochet, and that's pretty much it. I don't think Newcomb had in his last start, he was bad in the first inning and then settled down afterwards. Fitz was whatever in his start. And I know that there's injuries, right? We all know that Bayo's hurt. We know that Crawford's hurt. We know that Giolito's hurt. So it's not exactly the A-team out there. But it is worth kind of looking at and examining because Tanner Houck's not a backup. Walker Buehler's not a backup. That's two of your top three starters. And so far this year, in a year where pitching is clearly ahead of hitting on this team, neither one of those guys have looked particularly inspiring. And that's just to say, I expect them to get better. I expect that as the season goes on and their arms get a little looser, that I think these guys didn't just forget how to pitch. But with Walker Buehler in particular, watching him yesterday, he's getting up there. He has recovered from some injuries, not played well before and after the injuries. And despite what you saw in the World Series, which was fantastic, by the way, and listen, if the Red Sox get to the World Series, then I would absolutely put Walker Buehler in there as much as you can because he does seem to have that flair for the dramatics. But right now, I don't know. I'm not sure what to make of him. I'm not sure what to make of Walker Buehler. I don't know if I'm not as convinced that over the course of the next month or so, Walker Buehler is going to round into form the same way I'm confident that Tanner Houck is. I feel like Tanner Houck, we know what Tanner Houck looks like. He's still relatively young. There may be something, you know, physically going on with him. I have no idea. But in the event that there isn't, and there's no reason to think that there is, they haven't said anything like that, then I expect him to bounce back. I expect him to get a little bit more command of his pitches and start striking guys out again because he's had trouble doing that so far. All in all, when you have an ace, the rest of the rotation doesn't, I don't know, it's not as big of a deal. If the rest of the rotation's underperforming, so long as the ace goes out there and he's the stopper, then the offense can do their thing and the high-scoring games with the other teams and all of that kind of works itself out. But I do think that's something to keep an eye on. There was some major capital put into this rotation between Crochet, between Buehler, all that. I mean, you got guys in here now that are supposed to really cement this thing. And so far, it's been kind of schmeh. So I'll keep an eye on that, but for the most part, I think the team's starting to look a lot better. I love that the offense has come to life. I love that you're seeing guys hitting like this. I love Christian Campbell. How can you not? All of it's going pretty well so far. Keep an eye on that rotation. All right, our next headline is the New England Patriots, and some sad news if you're a Travis Hunter fan, which if you listen to me ever, then you know that I really, really am. It seems like that's probably not happening now. Why not? Well, it looks like the Cleveland Browns have zeroed in on Travis Hunter. The Cleveland Browns, who were picking second in the draft, by the way. Cleveland Browns, who were quarterbacked by Deshaun Watson and Kenny Pickett. And the Cleveland Browns, who were run by one of the worst owners in the history of the sport. It's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that that's who they've decided is going to be their guy. I don't really know that Travis Hunter is going to be all that effective on a Browns team. Maybe they put him in the secondary. Their defense is pretty good. If they have him on offense, I feel like that's a waste. Deshaun Watson is basically finished, and Kenny Pickett was never started. I think that if you ask Travis Hunter who we'd rather play with, Drake May, Deshaun Watson, or Kenny Pickett, he would say Drake May. And all of that to say this, if you weren't a Travis Hunter fan, and I know a lot of you aren't, a lot of you out there just don't like anybody from Colorado, you don't like Shador, you don't like Deion, you don't like Travis Hunter, you don't like any of them, fine, whatever. What am I supposed to do? Just stand out in the street, you know, stand out in the street with a sign telling you how great Travis Hunter is? I'm not going to do that. I think he's really good. He won the Heisman. He won the Biletnikoff. He's considered the best player in college football last year. People don't like him. Whatever. I'm not going to argue with you. I'm just going to tell you this. Even if you don't like him, well, what do you think of Abdul Carter? Because if you don't like Abdul Carter either, then I guess this doesn't matter. But if you do like Abdul Carter, and the Giants are taking a look at him right now, then you have to start considering the idea that maybe it's time to trade up. Now, Shedeur Sanders had his pro day the other day. And by all accounts, was fantastic. I watched some of the videos. I thought they looked good. I never know what I'm looking for at these pro days. I see some people saying, this is the best pro day I've ever seen. I see some people saying, oh, he's got a hitch in his throw. Oh, he's got happy feet. Oh, he's got this, he's got that. I saw some pretty good throws. I don't know. I watched every single Colorado game last year. Shedeur Sanders was awesome last year. He's tough. He makes good decisions. He's got a big arm. He's accurate. Teammates like him. Like, I'm not really sure what people don't like about him, aside from the fact that he's Deion's kid. And sure, I understand the natural instinct to want to lash out at Nepo babies, but he's not a Nepo baby. I mean, he put those numbers out himself. He may have gotten some additional opportunities because Deion Sanders is his dad, but he stepped up and he was one of the best quarterbacks in college football, if not, you know, number two. So the Giants have already gone down a quarterback path with Russell Wilson and with Jameis Winston. I don't know if they're planning on drafting Shedeur Sanders. It seems like they're not. That's what Schefter said last time. He's like, it seems like the Giants are probably not going to be in the quarterback market. He said he was feeling that way. So if you like Abdul Carter, then the Giants are probably going to be taking a good long look at him. If they don't want Sanders, then Abdul Carter's the guy. And if you're a Patriots fan and you like Hunter or you like Carter, or you don't like Hunter and you do like Carter, if you don't like either of them, then I guess it doesn't matter. But if you like Abdul Carter, then you need to join me on Team Trade Up. There's plenty of room. We got plenty of room on the bandwagon. I think I'm the only person on it. I haven't heard anybody else talk about this team trading up. Not one person. I think that's what they should do. They have the fourth overall pick. It's looking less and less valuable by the day. Maybe you're a big Will Campbell fan. Maybe you're a big Mason Graham fan. Even if you are a big Mason Graham fan, how many defensive tackles does this team need? All right? Barmore's going to be back. You got Williams. You got all these guys. You're going to draft another one? Like, come on. There's only two spots there. You know, you gotta start working on the rest of the team. And Abdul Carter is an edge rusher, and they don't really have much in the way of edge rushers right now. So listen, he's not my first choice. I want Travis Hunter. But if it's gonna not be him, then yeah, Abdul Carter's my guy. Ahead of Will Campbell, ahead of Mason Graham, ahead of Tet McMillan, ahead of all those guys. And it looks like the only way you can get him now is if you trade up. So again, I was way ahead of this. I'm not going to blame anybody for waiting until now to get on the bandwagon, but there's plenty of room on the trade-up bandwagon, and I think it's something that Elliott Wolf, Mike Vrabel, and the rest of the brain trust over there needs to very, very seriously consider. Also, Karen Garigian and Mass Live had an expose on the Joe Milton trade today and why it was executed the way it was, why it seems like they didn't really get all that much back for him, and all of this whispers behind the scenes about Drake May, Joe Milton, having the two of them in the room together and some issues that may have arisen from that. Also, what does Joe Milton want? And where do they were they trying to accommodate him with this trade? We'll get into all of that in just a little bit. Also, it's the third straight year that the Patriots are going to be in the market for a kicker. It's kind of weird. I feel like kicker was something Bill always took care of. He was always like, yeah, I'll get that kicker out of the way. And he would just go ahead and do it, whether it was drafting a guy like Gostkowski or picking someone off the scrap heap like Nick Folk or drafting a proud boy like he did that one year or whatever else. You know, like he seemed like he was always, at the very least, trying to be on top of that. And I don't know who the kicker's going to be this year. I have no idea. That takes us to the Celtics, who made history the other day with three-pointers in the season. That's a record they will continue to build off of. I was thinking about that, too, and I was thinking about a lot of the complaints that people have about the modern NBA and people shooting too many threes and all of that. And I wonder, is that something Celtics fans are bothered by? I know that there's a lot of people, I don't watch the NBA anymore, ever since this, ever since that. There's a lot of points. When I was younger, it was, I don't watch the NBA anymore because they don't call traveling. Guys can just palm the ball now. And it was like, okay, all right, bye. See you later then, I guess. And now it's, I don't watch the NBA anymore. People shoot too many three-pointers. And I don't know when that became bad. I don't know when shooting three-pointers became a bad thing. It's tough to really know. You can say they shoot too many three-pointers, that the three-pointer itself isn't the problem. It's that they're just constantly chucking. And I guess I get that. It's a style thing. But it's not like that's the only way that people score. It's not even the majority of the shots that people take, that teams take anymore, or these days. And it is moving in that direction, no question about it. And people have been covering this and talking about it for years and years and years. There's a book called Sprawl Ball about how, you know, people are moving to the three-point line and all that. And listen, it's a game, and it evolves. Look at the way they used to play football. Look at the way they used to play hockey. look at every sport 40 years ago and look at it now and tell me it hasn't changed a little bit. So I guess that's just part of it. With the three-pointers, though, the Celtics, I mean, listen, they have a very, very good three-point shooting team. And as we get closer and closer to the playoffs, only a handful of games left to go here, I feel as though the Celtics are in great position to make a deep playoff run and repeat as champions, although Vegas doesn't think so. Vegas has OKC as the odds-on favorite to win the NBA championship, and for the first time in a while, I feel like the Celtics have legitimate bulletin board material, so that's nice. Which brings us to our last headline, which is, down goes the Dukies. Oh, that was nice last night, wasn't it? I didn't realize until last night that I still hate Duke. I didn't know that. I just sort of felt like once Krzyzewski was gone that there wasn't really going to be that same kind of anymore. And I don't hate Cooper Flagg. I really like Cooper Flagg, as a matter of fact. I love that the number one player in the country is some kid from Maine. I think that that's fantastic. I don't hate Cooper Flagg. It's not his fault. He was right to go to Duke, and he's going to probably be the number one pick and whatever. But I still hate Duke. Yeah, I do. I don't know why. I didn't like him growing up, even though they had a guy named Christian on the team, and I generally root for athletes named Christian, and I did root for Leitner when he was in the NBA, but not at Duke. Bobby Hurley, Grant Hill, all those guys. When I was a kid, didn't like him. Didn't like Duke. And after Krzyzewski retired, I didn't have the same passionate dislike for Duke anymore. But watching Houston beat him last night, I was really happy. I was like, all right, go ahead. Go get him. Knock him off. Bye, Duke. See you later. And again, that's not because I dislike the players on Duke or the car or anything like that. It's just something about the team. Something about that school. Something about the name. I don't even know what it is. Those Cameron crazy. It's just all of it. It's just all, ugh. That didn't go away from me like I thought it would. So that was nice to see. Cooper Flagg, by the way, was awesome in that game. That was a BS foul on him to call at that point. But listen, they had a chance. He had a chance. And whoever that kid on Houston was that was guarding him was playing some great defense because Flagg got around him. He got around him and he raised up for the shot, and that guy got his hand right in his face. Flagg had to just barely get that shot up over his hand, and he front rimmed it. That was great defense. And Houston plays great defense. I mean, really, they are a fantastic defensive team. I thought the Final Four was awesome last night. From Florida coming back down 8 at the half, I thought that was awesome. I felt bad for Auburn and those kids. And then Barkley came on afterwards, and I didn't feel bad for him at all. And then after that, Duke and Houston, what a heavyweight fight that was. That was tremendous. A tremendous night of basketball. And I got to give you a mea culpa here because I was complaining, four number ones, that sucks. No, four number ones was pretty good. I enjoyed the four number ones way more than I thought I would. Listen, we all love Cinderella stories, but those were two awesome games yesterday. I have no complaints whatsoever. I thought they were great. All right, there you go. There's your headlines for the day. We'll come back. I got more on Chaim Bloom and the McAdam article on Breslow. Also, you allow one guy to spend and not the other. You build for the future with prospects. You ask a guy to do a certain job and he does it. So why did he get so much hate? We'll get to all that right after Jacob Lastner gets you caught up on what's trending.
Going on. Prices keep going up these days. It feels like being on an elevator that only goes up.
Going up.
But not at Metro. We're pushing the down button.
Going down.
We've lowered prices. Get one line of 5G data for $40, period. That's 20% lower. And you get a free 5G phone when you bring your number. Only at Metro.
5-year guarantee on eligible plans. Exclusions apply. See website for details. Not available at Metro with T-Mobile in the past 6 months. Tax applies.
Question for our listeners. Which automaker assembles the most vehicles in the country? Here's a hint. It's the same one that employs the most hourly workers in the country, and the answer is Ford. That's not a coincidence. It's a commitment. A commitment your local Ford stores share. And that is why Ford is now offering employee pricing across their full lineup of vehicles, which means you pay what they pay. So visit your local Ford stores today to take advantage of this great opportunity. Ford Motor Company. From America, for America.
If you don't know about flyer deals on Instacart, this message is for you. Flyer deals are like strolling through your favorite store looking for deals, but you're scrolling your phone and maybe you're in bed because getting delivery doesn't mean you have to miss deals like you get at the store, like the one creamer that doesn't make your stomach hurt or the pasta sauce you can't not buy when it's on sale. So download the Instacart app, shop flyers, and never miss a deal on one of your favorites. Plus, get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. That's why Dollar Shave Club makes the razors, but you make the rules. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Dollar Shave Club products are now available everywhere. Or visit their site right now for 20% off $20 or more and get your products delivered right to your door. Visit dollarshaveclub.com/shaveup and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more. And remember, whatever you shave, welcome to the club.
Hey everyone, summer is just around the corner and May's packed with reasons to celebrate. Whether you're firing up the grill for a backyard barbecue, soaking up the sun by the pool, or enjoying a long weekend with friends and family, Whole Foods Market makes it easy to kick off the season with great everyday prices on high quality favorites, from fresh produce to grilling essentials. Let's dive into the savings and get your summer fun started right. Personally, I love how easy Whole Foods Market makes it to pull together a last-minute gathering. I was there recently picking up a few things for a cookout, and those yellow low-price signs are no joke. I grabbed their No Antibiotics Ever Ground Turkey and a few 365 by Whole Foods Market Organic Salad Kits. Honestly, so convenient and surprisingly affordable. The quality is still everything you'd expect, but I definitely felt like I was scoring a deal, which I love. Plus those yellow sale signs, I make a beeline for them now. Especially when I saw strawberries on sale, we went through 2 cartons in 1 day. Save on May celebrations with great everyday prices at Whole Foods Market.
617-779-7937 is the phone number. It's Reverend Eric Dan here, Sunday Mass. Short Mass today. Only got about another hour left until we hand things over to Red Sox pregame. Who's on pregame today, Jacob? Joe Weil?
Joe Weil, yes.
Joe Weil. And then we got a doubleheader with John Lyons in between. What more could you ask for, sports fans? What more could you ask for than that? 617-779-7937 is the phone number. I don't have access to the text line, so you can text then. I won't see it. You can follow me on Twitter, at Christian Arcand, and you can follow my show, which you hear weeknights here on WEEI whenever there's not a Red Sox game, from 6 to 10, the Christian Arcand Show, at the Arcand Show on Twitter as well. Let's go to the phone. Steve is in Fall River. My good friend Steve has a thought on Chaim Bloom. Hi, Steve.
I had a thought on Chaim Bloom. I was defending him during the time he was here. And I was called a Red Sox apologist. I think you called me that a couple of times.
No, Steve, I never did. Steve, hold on a second. Before I let you go, and I will let you go, I am the only person that has defended Chaim Bloom at this station or any station, I think, in the entire state. Well, I've been defending him this entire time.
I was called an apologist.
I was, too.
There were people that had all this consternation about what they were doing. Why aren't they doing this? Why aren't they doing that? And I called and said many times, they have a plan. You just don't like it. They want to be the Baltimore Orioles with payroll. They're not doing this, they're not doing that. It's like, that's what they want to do. They've told you what they want to do. Now, the trade deadline, all this hand-wringing over the last couple of years, they didn't do stuff at the trade line. This Christian Campbell could have went at the trade deadline, okay? Yep. Chaim Bloom was just there to make it. Now, I'm going to give you a truism. The team that wants to buy something at the trade deadline always pays too much money. It's not the time to do it. Unless you're really, really, you have to have that piece.
The last couple of trade deadlines, they were right on the cusp of the wild card. So that's when you do it, right? Isn't that when you buy?
If you had a team that was worth buying, but as we found that hindsight being 2020, I think they're better off now than giving away a Christian Campbell or somebody else we don't know about. I mean, they did make a trade last trade deadline. They gave three pitchers away. No one knows who they are. One of them might crop up in a few years. How did that work out from the last trade deadline? They did trade three pitchers away for somebody last year, and he promptly got hurt. I think it was the guy they brought back, the lefty. They traded somebody, guys. And I'm not here to tell you you never trade. I'm here, and I also said something, Christian, no one ever said. I said Hein Bloom left the Red Sox in way better shape than Bill Belichick. Nobody in this universe said that except me. I told, you're hearing this, I got a big argument yesterday with Rob Bradford because I said he was dying to have a high payroll. He was dying to have a bad contract. He said, what do you mean I wanted to have a bad contract? If you didn't want the Red Sox formula of being Baltimore, then yes, you wanted a bad contract. It's like the people that are against Doge. You know this thing happened in the world, Doge?
Yeah, I know Doge. We're not talking about Doge, Steve. Thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Thank you, Steve. You can hang up on him, Jacob. That's enough. We're not talking about Doge. Come on. We're not doing the Doge thing. Especially not now. We're going to talk about Doge today. How's that 401k looking, Steve? Thank you, Matt. Not doing that. And listen, Steve, I gave you some time to talk. Don't get mad because I'm cutting you off here. We got other callers to get to. Real quick, just want to address some of that. You have to spend money in baseball to compete. You just do. And sometimes that means bad contracts. And there were some bad contracts on the books already. Some of them moved on from. Chris Sale was considered a bad contract until they traded him to Atlanta and he became the best pitcher in the league. But, you know, there's... It varies like that sometimes. You can't always set your watch to it. Either way, I think Alex Bregman, $40 million, in a lot of ways, is not a great contract, right? You look at that and you say, well, that seems like a massive overpay, and it is. But that's what you have to do. That's the way of the world, especially when you're a big market team like the Red Sox. Baltimore wants to do it their way? Sure. How many championships are they winning? How many championships has Tampa Bay won? Moneyball with the Oakland A's won them how many championships again? You also have to spend. I'm sorry. It's just the way it is. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Man, I've never heard Steve yell that loud. He knew I was about to hang up on him. And he was like, ah! I've never heard him get that animated before. He's usually much more reserved. Anyway, Steve, you know I love you, buddy, but I have to get to other callers. Like Dan in Springfield, who has a thought on the NBA. Go ahead, Dan.
Yeah, hey, how you doing? Look, I think it's time that the NBA allowed full zone defense. And the reason I say that is because you only have about two players per team that can shoot a decent percentage on three-pointers. And so if they can't shoot, zone them. There are two ways you can get rid of a zone. You can shoot your way out of it, or you can run more plays closer to the basket for other people to hit
Dan,
the shot.
What are you talking about? Let them use full zone. They're allowed to play zone.
No, they're not.
In the NBA, not like,
you can't. I've never seen a 1-3-1 or a 2. You know, I've never seen those full zone defense in the NBA.
They're allowed to do. I mean, absolutely, they're allowed to. There was a time when they weren't. There was a time where you couldn't play zone defense and you get caught
for
a foul.
But
now you're allowed to. It's been like that for a while. A lot of teams don't do it, though, because you leave guys open. You're in a zone defense. Guys are going to get open and shoot threes, and that's why a lot of teams don't do it.
Exactly, but how many do they hit? I don't see the percentages going up. And like Damian Lillard, I never liked him. He was one of the worst defenders to me that brought the ball up and then take a shot before anybody else touched it. And look what he did to Milwaukee when he first got there.
Yeah.
Destroyed the chemistry.
Wasn't his fault.
I don't know if that was his fault 100%. They fired their co. A whole bunch of stuff happened there. And Lillard, by the way, he's out with the blood clots, but I think they just said he might come back for the playoffs, which would be nice to see. It would make the playoffs a little bit more exciting. But Lillard
I thought that his style of play would initially hurt the chemistry of the Bucks, and it did.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I don't know. I don't know if it was 100% just him. Thanks for the call.
They asked Antoine Walker once why he shot so many threes.
Can't shoot
and his answer was, because there are no fours.
That's right. That's exactly right. Dan, thanks for the call. Thanks for checking in. Call back anytime. The zone defense thing, I think, was part of why three-point shooting exploded the way it did. Once they allowed you to play zone defense, then guys could just set up and you move the ball around and make enough passes in a zone defense, you're going to find holes in the zone. And I don't know. I feel like when I see NBA teams playing zone defense, it's usually against teams that don't shoot threes as well. You're in a zone, someone's going to be open for three, they're going to get a pass, and they're going to hit it. It's much more likely that it happens that way than it does in man-to-man defense, I think. That's my observation. I don't have numbers to back that up, but that's just my observation. But you certainly can play zone defense in the NBA now, 100%. All right, let's see here. How about Eddie in New Hampshire? Go ahead, Eddie.
Hey, what's happening, guys?
What's up, Eddie?
So Houston, 50-3 runs to end the game. And just shove Duke right down out of the Final Four.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying?
Oh, yeah.
A 15-3 run.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? They're like,
absolutely.
They just like, you know, what did you, they're like, okay, they scored 22 in the first half.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Go back and look.
I know.
It might have been 24.
It wasn't 22. It was 28. That's okay. I know. Okay, I get the gist. I know what you're talking about.
Whatever it was like so low scoring. Mm. The lowest scoring game in the Final Four we've ever seen, right?
Yeah.
They were just like impotent. Couldn't hit the broad side of a barn, right?
Nope. No, they couldn't.
Whatever they were doing, like, you know what I mean?
I can't tell. Were you rooting? Were you rooting for Houston or were you rooting for Duke? I can't tell.
Oh, I want to see greatness.
Okay.
That's all I wanted Sunday to morning. See.
That's right. Thanks for the call. Eddie, thanks for the call. Appreciate it. Appreciate you. It was a great game last night. Both games I thought were great games. That was great calls here this morning. We got Screaming Steve. We got... Forgot that you can play zone defense, and we got whatever that was there from Eddie. Tremendous run of phone calls here to start the show. 617-779-7937 is the phone number. Let's try and keep that going, all right? I'm enjoying this so far. I want to talk a little bit more about Abdul Carter and the Patriots and what they should do here in the draft, as it looks like Travis Hunter's going to
Baseball's number one digital destination is the MLB app. And this app's got game. Like game highlights, live games, fantasy games, and more.
The gem of a game!
This is baseball your way. With stats, scores, breaking news, and daily custom content that hits every time.
A monster shot!
Because here, you choose the teams and pick the players you want to follow.
All year long.
So when they catch it on the field,
what a catch!
You catch it on the MLB app. Download today. Major League Baseball trademarks used with permission.
Every morning brings a fresh new energy.
This is Today.
And no matter what the day holds, we come to the Today Show for all of it.
When things are tough, we talk about it. When there's something to figure out, we dig into it. And when there's joy, we celebrate it.
Because today is where it's all happening. We get the best start to every morning because we start it together.
Watch the Today Show with Savannah Guthrie and Craig Melvin weekdays at 7 a.m. on NBC.
We'll get to that next. Some Abdul Carter highlights for you there. Although I wouldn't get too excited about him either these days, Patriots fans. It's Christian Arcan, Sunday Mass, Reverend Arcan here with you. Jeff Howe yesterday had this in The Athletic. He said, there's a growing belief around the league that Hunter is the favorite to go to the Cleveland Browns with the number two pick. This according to high-ranking executives and coaches. The Browns have been high on Hunter throughout the process. And as he went through his root tree on Friday during warm-ups, Browns GM Andrew Berry watched him intently from 10 yards away. I bet he did. Ryan Cowden was sent to Colorado's Pro Day. Usually, when the Patriots are really in on a guy, they send the whole squad. But they only sent Cowden, who is the vice president of player personnel. He's not, you know, they didn't send Wolf, they didn't send Vrabel, they didn't send all those guys. Cowden went down there and took a look at Hunter, took a look at Sanders. And now it really just comes down to this. If Cleveland is going to take Travis Hunter, which it breaks my heart to even say that word, speak that sentence, you take a dynamic, exciting, unprecedented type of football player and stick him in Cleveland, ugh. It's just, that's a crime. It should be a crime. It should be against the law. They should arrest the Cleveland Browns if they draft Travis Hunter. Arrest him and, put him under the jail. But since that seems to be the way that they're going, it all comes down to the New York Football Giants. It comes down to Big Blue and what it is they do with that third overall pick. Now, the Giants need a quarterback. And they had a bunch of scouts and people down there to watch Sanders throw. And by most accounts, Sanders had a great pro day. I don't know. I don't know what I'm looking for. The only time I can tell when someone's having a bad pro day is when a ball sails into the stands or something like that. When the guy doesn't catch it. Then I'm like, this guy's pro day is not going all that great. He's not. The wide receivers are dropping the ball. The people he's throwing to aren't catching it. And that's not always their fault either. So again, I don't really know what I'm looking for. All right.
I saw one pro day clip where the quarterback just missed his wide receiver on every single throw. I can't remember who it was, though.
Drake May. No, I don't know. Drake May didn't have a great pro day. You know, his pro day was fine, according to people. Again, I didn't know what I was looking for, but people who watched him was like, it was all right. Sanders had a good one, by all accounts. And I watched Shedeur Sanders all season with the Colorado Buffaloes. I'm a Colorado alum, and so I watched all of their games. Just like I did last year. It's been a while since, you know, Colorado gave you anything to watch. But these last 2 years have been really fun, and Sanders has been excellent. He's had a pro-style offense. He's had very good wide receivers. Offensive line, not so great. He's taken a ton of hits. He's tough. He's durable. He's accurate. Good decision-making. Scans the field. Like, he's got a lot of qualities that I like in a quarterback. And for some reason, his stock is just, I don't know. I don't know if people want to stick it to Deion. I don't know exactly what the problem is. They think he's cocky or he's arrogant. Like, that's unusual for a NFL quarterback. You think NFL quarterbacks, there's one in the league who's not cocky and arrogant? They're NFL quarterback. Think about high school quarterbacks. Every high school quarterback I ever met in high school was cocky and arrogant. In college, they're cocky and arrogant. That's kind of what the position is. You kind of have to be, you know? Show me a quarterback at any level without an ego, I'll show you a liar. At any rate, Shedeur Sanders. He's different. He was driving a Bentley around Boulder campus. Okay, so what? So he can't play? I don't know. I understand also people who look at the children of great athletes and say, he's only getting the shot because he's a great athlete's kid. And that's sometimes true. Sometimes it is. But sometimes that kid is Barry Bonds, you know, he could be the greatest of all time. And he was someone's kid. Okay, sure. Is he good? Can he play? Has he established himself outside the shadow of his father? Because I think Sanders has. In college, anyway, we'll see what kind of pro he is. But in college, I absolutely think he has. And there's a reason he's going to be drafted in the first round this year. There's a chance he drops, I guess. But if he drops out of the first round, I'll eat a shoe live on the air. That being said.
Good Adam to know. Schef-
Thank you. Yes, you saved that one. I really hope he doesn't. Adam Schefter said that he's starting to feel like the Giants, after really going 180 from his original take, which is that the Giants, even if they do take Russell Wilson and even if they do sign Jameis Winston, that they still could be in on Sanders because they really like Sanders and he's been in New York and had a catch with Malik Nabers or whatever it is. I don't know. There's all these different reasons. But the main reason is that they don't have a great quarterback situation, and Sanders could be their franchise quarterback of the future, which neither Jameis Winston or Russell Wilson is obviously going to be. But then Schefter said this past week, I don't know, I'm starting to get the feeling that the Giants are not in the Shedeur Sanders business anymore. Now, maybe the pro day changed that, and I'm freaking out over nothing. But if the Giants are out on Sanders, I got to assume that means they're in on Carter. And if they're in on Abdul Carter, then the Patriots are porked. Unless you're a huge Will Campbell fan, and I don't know anyone who is. I know some people who are big Mason Graham fans, but if they draft Mason Graham, I would consider that excessive. Excessive. How many defensive tackles does one team need? Okay? And it's not like the rest of the team's so great, and you got this good run stoppers up front. The rest of the team needs help. And you're just loading up on DTs. Like, come on. You're going to have to branch out a little bit, Vrabel. I'm sorry. I know you want to build from the inside out, and you love the trenches and everything else, but you bring in Mason Graham. I don't know. I won't be happy with that draft pick, even if he ends up being good, because there's just too many other holes on the team. Abdul Carter, if you want to get him, you're probably going to have to trade up for him. And I'm team trade up. And you should be too. And I bet a lot of you who saw that report from Jeff Howe about Hunter to Cleveland and heard Adam Schefter say that the Giants probably aren't in on Sanders anymore, you're probably starting to take a look at tickets for the bandwagon yourself. And I'm here to tell you, as the captain of the trade-up bandwagon, there's plenty of room. It took you a while to get here. I don't blame you for that. Can't always be ahead of things like I am, but I was ahead of this one. Admittedly, I was ahead of it to get Hunter. But now, in order to get Carter, you're probably going to have to do the same thing. And I know there's a lot more Carter fans out there than there are Hunter fans. I don't know why, but I know that that's true. And I'd be happy with Abdul Carter, much happier than I would be with Mason Graham. Abdul Carter, I think, is a better player. He plays on the edge. He's not an interior guy. And they don't have a lot in that department here on this roster currently. So, listen, Hunter's my number one. But if you like Abdul Carter, and if he's your number one, then you're going to have to jump on the bandwagon here. You're going to have to jump on the trade-up bandwagon. And I think the Patriots can do it. I think they easily can do it. And I don't care about Joe Milton or anything like that. That was maybe could have been a sweetener, I guess, for some team looking for a backup. But I don't think that's one thing that would have pushed it over the edge. They got picks. They got plenty of things that they can offer up here for the Giants or the Browns, whoever it is they want to trade with. If it's New York, then fine. Find out what they want. Find out what it's going to take to move up one spot. Because they'll probably, you know, if they're looking for defensive line help, they can take Graham. Or maybe they change their mind on Sanders once they drop down to four. I don't know. I don't care. Giants can do whatever they want. But as far as the Patriots are concerned, unless you want to get stuck with your you-know-what in your hands at the fourth overall pick and a bunch of quarterbacks, or short-arm tackles, or another defensive tackle, then I think that's the only other move. It's the only way out of this. And I hope they do it. I hope they do it. I hope they trade up to three and ensure that they either get Carter or Hunter. 617-779-7937, that's your phone number. We got open phone lines here. If you'd like to join the conversation about the Red Sox, about the Patriots, or about the Final Four, which we had a call on that already. We'll get to some of that as I have some thoughts on the tournament in general, some thoughts on Cooper Flagg, and the NBA. So we'll get to that right after this.